divine souls. We'll continue with the Bhakti Shatak from Doha number 42.
Jai Radhe Krishna, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Krishna, Radhe. 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 Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Radhe. Jai Radhe Krishna, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Krishna, Radhe. Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna Radhe Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna Radhe Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna Radhe Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna Radhe
We've been seeing repeatedly how in this Bhakti Shatak, Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj reconciles many of the most confounding contradictions, apparent contradictions of our scriptures and the teachings of the great historical saints. Here's another example. One of the big confusions people have is regarding whether there are is one tattva, two tattva, or three tattva. Tattva means a thing that exists. Is there only one thing that exists? Some people have argued this, and they quote from Vedas. Ekameva dvitiyam brahma nehana nasti kinchana chandogyopanishad. There is only God. There's one God, there's no second God, and other than God, there is nothing. Only one tattva. Ved says so. Same Ved says, Dva suparna sayuja sakhaya samanam vriksham parikhasva jate tayoranya pippalam svadvatya nashnannanyo abhichakashiti. This mantra comes in several Upanishads, Shvetashvatra Upanishad, Kathopanishad, Mundaka Upanishad. Dvasparna. There are two birds. Who are those birds? God and the soul. And those two birds are sitting in the same tree, which is the physical body, which is inhabited by both the soul and God. One, the bird, the one bird, the soul, is busy flitting around the tree trying to find some fruit to enjoy, some berries to pick off the tree and enjoy, and the other bird, his eternal friend about whom he's forgotten, is just sitting and watching him. The other friend is God. He's never forgotten the soul. He's sitting on one branch and just observing. He's not partaking of the fruit of that tree, which are some are bitter and some are sweet, depending on the karma of that soul. But the point is, there's two tattva, soul and God. Same Ved says, Ajamekam lohita shukla krishnam vahvi praja srijamanam sarupa ajoheko jushamano nushete jahatyenam bhukta bhogam ajonya. Shvetashvatra Upanishad says there are three things. Aj, aj, aja. Aj means unborn, eternally existing. One aj for God, one aj for souls, and aja means the same thing, but feminine, for maya. So three tattva. Bhokta, bhogyam, preritarancamatva sarvam proktam trividham brahmametat. Taittiriya Upanishad says there are three eternal tattva. Bhokta, the soul who is trying to enjoy bhogyam, the world. And there is one prerak, God, who gives life to all the souls and also activates maya. So three eternal tattva. So which is it? Someone could argue any of the three and be correct. So here, Jagatguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj has reconciled it in one simple doha. He says, Jeev and Maya are not independent tattva. They dependently exist because of God's grace. Can So, souls do not exist independent of God. They require God to stay within them and keep giving life to them. And Maya doesn't exist separate from God. Maya can only function if God provides the energy. So, God is called the Shaktiman. And Jeev and Maya are his two Shaktiyan. His two powers. Charam pradhanam amritaksharam haracharatmana vishate deva ekah. Shvetashvatra Upanishad says, there's one Ish, one supreme ruler, and he has two powers, Jeev and Maya. Jeev, the souls, which are eternally unchanged, and Maya, which is called Char, because it keeps changing. It doesn't remain in a stable state. But souls are called Akchar. They can never degrade or die. But both of these powers are ruled over by one Ish. Ishate Deva Ekaha. There's one Dev, one Supreme God, who rules over both. Apareyamitastvanyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. In Gita, Shri Krishna tells the same thing. He has one aparashakti and one parashakti. Apara means lower. Maya is his lower power because it's jad. It's a lifeless power. And souls are his parashakti. His higher power, because they are alive, they are sentient. And as described here in this doha, between the Shakti and the Shaktiman, there is a bheda bheda sambandh. That's what Sri Maharaji has said here. So what does that mean? Shaktiman is the base in which the Shakti resides. Shakti means power. Shaktiman means the owner of that power and the one in whom that power resides. Take a worldly example. Take a rose. A rose is actually like the Shaktiman, and the fragrance of the rose is like the Shakti. See, that Shakti, that fragrance, it exists in the base of the rose. It can't exist on its own. And there's a difference between the rose and its fragrance, because that fragrance can run out also, right? Later on, when the rose is past its prime, its bloom has wilted. Does the fragrance remain? No. It's gone. So the Shaktiman and the Shakti in this world are both separate and together, meaning the Shakti can't exist outside of the rose. If you want to extract it, you have to extract it on another base. You can extract rose fragrance in alcohol base if you want, but you can't just extract it in nothingness. So the Shakti requires a base in which to exist. So you see, there's a relationship between the power and the base. Look at another example in the world. What do we call kapoor? What do we call it in English? I forget. Camphor. Camphor is a white substance where, in this case, you see, the fragrance of the rose is not the rose, right? It's two separate things. But in the case of the kapoor, that thing is the fragrance. So the thing itself has become its own base. So you look at that white substance, when the fragrance evaporates from that, does the base remain? No, it disappeared into thin air. So the Shakti and Shaktiman are one and the same in the case of the kapoor. the reason I'm explaining this is that in the divine world, things are quite difficult to understand. For instance, Radha and Krishna, are they like the fragrance of the rose and the rose? Or are they like the fragrance of the Kapoor and the Kapoor? They're more like the Kapoor, actually. Radha and Krishna are one and the same, like the fragrance and the Kapoor. So Radha is like Shakti emphasis, and Shri Krishna is like Shaktiman emphasis, but both are one and the same. Radha is said to be the Shakti of Shri Krishna, and Shri Krishna is the Shaktiman. Now, when it comes to souls and Maya, we are also his Shakti. We also have this Bheda-Bhed Sambandh, meaning in some ways there's oneness between souls and God and Maya and God, and in some ways there is Bhed. Abhed means no difference, Bhed means difference. How is there a difference? And how is there non-difference? We call this Bheda-Bhed Sambandh. First, how is there non-difference? Take souls. Is there any part of ourself which is not permeated by God? No. So then where is the separation between us and God? Substantially, where do we begin and God ends? Or where does God end and we begin? You can't find a separation between us and God. Physically speaking, he permeates our very self, our very being. So from that point of view, would that be bhed or abhed? That's abhed. That was a test. None of you responded. So God permeates every particle of our being. So is that difference or non-difference? Non-difference. That's right. In another way, which is actually, so God is there, plus what is he doing? He's giving life to us. So could we exist without God? No. So that is also abhed. In that way, there's a total oneness between us and God. But we have our own individuality in some ways as well, which is the bhed side. We have our own free will. We perform our own karma. God certainly gives us the power to perform the karma, but he doesn't interfere in what we think, what we say, or what we do. Otherwise, if he did, he would just have us all become surrendered to him instantly, and we'd all be God realized, and I wouldn't need to be sitting here giving you a speech. So, there is individuality. In other words, soul and God are one from a certain way of looking at it, but from another way of looking at it, there's a difference between soul and God. Can a soul decide, I want to create the universe? Well, right now the universe is already created, so let's say a soul decides, Main pralay kar dun. Should I destroy the universe? Or somebody says, yeah, go ahead. What are you going to do? God just thinks, and it happens, the whole pralay of the whole unlimited universe. So there's a big difference between us and him. And during Mahapralay, then God just thinks, Ikchater na shabdam. He doesn't even have to say a single word. He just thinks the whole universe is produced. We can't do that. So there's a big difference between souls and God. God is always blissful, 24/7. And we very rarely feel much happiness. Most of the time we're either neutral or stressed, and sometimes sorrowful or disappointed, and sometimes happy. So there's a big difference. How about between Maya and God? Same thing regarding the physical existence of Maya not being separate from God, just like our physical existence isn't separate from God. God permeates every particle of Maya, and in fact you can say Maya exists on the base of God, like algae grows on the surface of a pond. Does the algae just grow in thin air? No, it exists on the base of that water. So just like if a pond gets completely covered in algae, you can't even see the water underneath it. You only see the algae. Something like that, we only see the Maya in this world, but it's actually existing on the base of God. But God is invisible to us. Nonetheless, He permeates every particle of Maya. So there's no separation between Him and Maya. And also, Maya cannot exist without God, cannot do anything, cannot create the universe without God. So from that point of view, there's a total oneness between Maya and God. And yet, Maya doesn't have any of the divine characteristics of God. Whereas God is Chetan, Maya is Jad. Maya is lifeless, mindless, feelingless. Whereas God is the very form of perfection, stability, divine knowledge and bliss, Maya is the very form of instability, imperfection, and is always a combination of good and bad characteristics, qualities, whereas God is the absolute divine goodness personified. So there's a big difference between God and Maya as well. So you see, there's a bheda-bheda sambandh, where Vedas are saying there's only one thing and there's nothing else. They're describing that abhed side. They're saying, well, Maya and souls exist, sure, but they're not separate from God and their existence depends on God. So let's just keep it simple. There's only God and there's nothing else, correct? And then when Ved says there's two things, leaving Maya aside because Maya is jad, there's two chetan tattva, God, and souls. So souls are the ones who are seeking happiness, and if they can find God, they'll be happy forever. This situation is also described, dvasuparna. And then where the whole thing is being described in detail, there's three tattva being described, that although Maya and souls cannot exist separately from God, but they have their own individual characteristics. God is God and souls are souls, and God is God and Maya is Maya. There is some difference. So when Ved is describing the full picture, it tells about all three tattva. This is what's explained here. Jivu Maya dui shakti hai. Shaktiman Bhagavan. Jiva and Maya are powers, and Bhagwan is the Shaktiman, the base of those powers. Shakti bhed abhed bhi. There's both bhed and abhed. Some people try to say there's only abhed. Some people try to say there's only bhed. Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj says, no, there's both. There's bhed and there's abhed. You have to understand the whole situation. So this is a big confusion, which is reconciled very elegantly here in this one simple doha. And now you can also understand the next doha. Atma bich paramatma. Within your atma, within your soul, bich means within, atma bich paramatma. The supreme soul, Shri Krishna, he inhabits every soul. Karata nivasa sadai. He's always inhabiting every soul. Yate kahu kahu. Because of that, at some places in Vedas, atma paramatma kahalai. This is why this certain statements of Vedas can be very confusing. Sometimes Ved is actually referring to an individual soul and it will call it paramatma. Why? Because Paramatma is there inside of your soul. And sometimes Ved is referring to Paramatma, and we'll just keep it short and call Atma. Atma could mean either Jivatma, a soul, or Paramatma, Bhagwan. So it's very confusing if you try to read Vedas or even Gita on your own because of all of this terminology and not being able to understand the underlying philosophy, we can get very, very confused. That's why it's extremely important to have proper guidance and not just go and study these texts on our own. So here, this is also a huge confusion for many, many scholars, and Kripaluji Maharaj has answered it very easily in just one doha. So we'll sing these dohas now.
Jai Radhe Krishna, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Krishna, Radhe. 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 Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. Krishna, Jai Krishna, Jai Krishna, Jivu Maya Dui Shakti Hai Shakti Man Bhagavan Radhe Radhe. Shakti bhed abhed bhi Shakti man tejan radhe radhe Atma bich Paramatma karat nivas sadaya radhe radhe bich Paramatma Paramatma या ते काहू काहू आत्मा परमात्मा कहलाए राधे राधे काहू काहू
जय राधे कृष्ण राधे 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 कृष्ण राधे 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 In the last shloka, which we'll look at tonight, or doha, I mean, Sri Maharaj Ji states a very important point about bhakti. Lakhat rahat nit bhakti mukh karma yoga arugyan. The other spiritual paths, karma, yoga, and jnana, they keep looking to the face of bhakti. What does that mean? It means that they depend on bhakti. They cannot take a soul to that soul's ultimate goal without bhakti. But conversely, ati swatantra hai bhakti patha ved puran bakhan. Bhakti panth, the path of bhakti, is ati swatantra, absolutely independent. Why do we say this? You've already learned in my explanation that bhakti is the only means of reaching God. Because bhakti actually means joining your mind with God. You can call that surrender. You can call it sharanagati, you can call it prapatti, you can call it devotion, you can call it bhakti. It has many words, but it all means the same thing. From inside, our heart, our mind has to be surrendered to God. Or you can say attached to God. That is bhakti. That is the only means of receiving God's grace in order to become liberated from Maya and to attain God. And that's the ultimate goal of a soul, to be free from suffering forever and to attain perfect happiness forever. That's everyone's ultimate goal, and that goal is only achievable through bhakti. We've already covered this. But this is a subtle point. What we just heard in this doha, it's a further, to further your understanding about the supremacy of bhakti, it's said that these other paths are dependent on bhakti. So what that means is karma on its own, where does it take you? Karma means doing good actions, doing all your family duties, making some personal sacrifice so that you can give some charity and try and do some good in the world, also observing worshiping formalities on special days, performing Vedic rituals on certain appropriate days, like when you move into a new house or you have a child born to you or you name your child or even when someone passes away. Observing all of this is the path of karma. If someone does all of that but leaves out bhakti, they're doing all of that good karma but their mind is not attached in God while they're doing it, the most they can get is the attainment of swarga. You've also learned that swarg is actually under maya. So if you go to swarg, you're coming back here eventually. There's no perfect happiness in swarg, and any soul who goes to swarg ends up being reborn here in this mrityulok. So that's the ultimate gati of karma marg. It can't take you any further than swarg. So it's an incomplete path if your desire is freedom from suffering and the attainment of divine bliss. What needs to be added? Bhakti. If you add bhakti, if you do the same good karma with your mind attached to God, it becomes karma yoga. In other words, karma plus bhakti equals karma yoga. But it's not the karma part that results in you attaining God. If you're doing karma yoga, you're doing all those good actions and your mind is attached to God. So you're doing two things. Out of those two, which one is going to be responsible for you reaching God? Having your mind attached to God. The good karma is incidental. Ye sansar ko chalane ke liye hai. That's to maintain harmony in the family and the society. But that doesn't result in God realization. It's a good thing. It doesn't result in God realization. The surrender of your mind results in God realization. So that's bhakti. This is why we say karma is dependent on bhakti. Without bhakti, just by following karma, you can't reach God. We learn the same thing about the path of yoga. Yoga is a way of purifying the heart and controlling the activities of the mind. Yogaschitta vritti nirodha. The very beginning of Yoga Darshan, sage Patanjali says, this yoga I'm going to teach you, this Ashtang yoga, it's going to help you get control over your mind. And the ultimate height that we can reach by following this eightfold path of yoga described by sage Patanjali is to have the mind quieted and to have purified the mind, have it established in its sattvic quality, and have knowledge of the self. Swarupa pratishtha, to be established in the knowledge that I am the divine soul. That is the ultimate reach of the path of yoga. But even the one who has purified his mind still has a mayic mind. His mind is just sattvic and the rajas and tamas qualities have been suppressed or subdued. If that same yogi surrenders his mind to God, he can also be free from maya and free and attain divine bliss. So if someone is following the path of yoga and doing it as an offering to God, doing it while remembering God, surrendering to receive God's grace, then he can attain God. But it's the bhakti part. It's the fact that he surrendered his mind to God that results in freedom from maya and the attainment of divine bliss. It's not the yam, niyam, asan, pranayam, pratyahar, dharana, dhyan, samadhi. It's not these eight steps in the path of yoga that result in him attaining God and getting free from maya. It's the fact that he surrendered his mind to God. So this is why we say yoga is also dependent on bhakti. Same thing with Gyan. Vivek Vairagya, Shamadhi Shat Sampatti Mumukshutva, Shravan, Manan, Nididhyasan, Samadhi. Also, Eightfold Path of Gyan. It's further broken down into 15 parts by Jagadguru Shankaracharya, but generally we say it's an Eightfold Path of Knowledge, Gyan. So the Gyani can also fully purify his heart, and he can get the knowledge of the self, Atma Gyan, but unless he surrenders to God to get God's grace, just by his manan on the philosophy that I am a divine soul, I am not this body, I am one with God, just by doing manan of that, he can't free himself from maya. He has to surrender to God to get his grace. So gyan plus bhakti equals gyan yog. Here the yog part means joining his mind with God. So when he adds bhakti, then he can be free from maya with God's grace. This is why we say that all the other spiritual paths, which all are put into just karma, gyan, and yog, they all depend on bhakti. But bhakti doesn't depend on anybody. You can just do bhakti, leaving aside karma, leaving aside yoga, leaving aside gyan, and you can attain God. There are so many examples in our history. So bhakti is supreme because it gives the result of all the other paths as well. Shri Krishna says in Bhagavatam, yat karma bhir yat tapasa gyana vairagya tashchayat yogena dana dharmena shreyo bhiritarairapi. Whatever you get from karma, dan, tapascharya, yog, gyan, whatever you get from all these other spiritual paths, you get automatically from bhakti. Because bhakti is supreme. When you're receiving God's grace, what else do you need? So whatever siddhis you may get on the path of yoga, if someone who's doing bhakti wants siddhis, although it's not advisable, they could have it. They don't have to do yoga separately to get the siddhis. Bhagwan can give you siddhis if you want. You want liberation? Theek hai, wo bhi le lo. You want to go to swarg, the benefit of karma marg? Theek hai, you can do bhakti and ask God to send you to swarg. Bhakti marg gives you everything, whatever you could obtain or attain through any other path. Yad durlabham yad aprapyam manaso yanna gocharam tadapyaprarthito dhyato dadati madhusudana. Garuda Puran says, whatever is difficult to obtain, whatever is impossible to attain, whatever is beyond your even imagination of your mind, Shri Krishna gives all of that to the one who lovingly remembers him. So bhakti is supreme from every angle. Bhakti swatantra sakala sukha khani. Tulsidas ji says, bhakti is independent. Swatantra. Tehi adhina jnana vijnana. But all other paths are adhin. They're under the path of bhakti, dependent to bhakti. Liberation comes automatically. You don't have to do something extra. Bhakti. Ti karati soi mukuti gosai anichit avat bariyai. Even if a bhakt doesn't want liberation, liberation, mukti, comes with folded hands in front of the one who has surrendered to Shri Krishna and says, koi seva bataiye. And the bhakt says, dure tishtham, get out of here. I don't want any mukti disturbing my dvaitras, the enjoyment I'm getting from serving Shri Krishna in his personal form. I don't want that disturbed. if I get caught up in liberation and I merge into Shri Krishna's formless aspect, that will be finished. So, oh, you muktis, thank you, but no thank you. You go back to your master. Shri Krishna is their master as well. These five types of mukti who are also personified, they say, well, our master Shri Krishna has sent us to serve you. You are his bhakt, right? Yes, I am, but I don't want your seva. You go back and serve your master. Sarshti samipya salokya sarupya ikatvam apyut diyamanam nagrihananti vinamat sevanam jana bhagvatam. Bhagwan is saying, even if I try to give those five types of mukti to my devotee, nagrihananti, he doesn't accept it. He wants to just do my seva personally in the divine abode. Rup Goswami has said in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhilashita shunyam. He's talking about the conditions of bhakti. He says, and this is actually coming up in the next one, that bhakti should be free from all the desires, except for the desire to serve your divine beloved, Shri Krishna. And in addition to that, it should be free from any avaran, any kind of covering of other spiritual practices. Covering means if another spiritual practice is there, it's fine, but you have to do it with the understanding that it is subservient to bhakti. For example, if someone thinks that, okay, I'm doing bhakti to Shri Krishna, why? To get his divine vision so I can get divine bliss and be freed from this cycle of birth and death. So I'm doing bhakti to Shri Krishna. But, today is a certain day where I'm also supposed to do this yajna to please Indra. It happened in Braj, right? All the Brajwasis were going to do a yajna to Indra, who's nothing more than the king of Swarg, a mayic being himself. This is part of Karmakand. This is part of the path of karma. So if you're already doing bhakti to Shri Krishna, there's no need to also worship the devtas in Swarg, even Indra. So that's why Shri Krishna taught them. He said, what are you doing? Why are you doing this pujan to Indra? Govardhan Hill is my other form, so let's go and worship Govardhan Hill instead of worshiping a celestial god, Indra. That's one of the reasons that this lila happened, to teach the souls the importance of ananyata. Yatha taror mulani shechanena. Bhagavatam says, just like if you water a tree's roots and you're giving it sufficient water in the roots, do you also have to sprinkle water on the leaves to make sure they don't dry up? No, the water from the root gets absorbed into the leaves. The branches, the twigs, the roots, the flowers, the fruit, everything gets watered if you just pour it on the root. Similarly, Shri Krishna is supreme. So if you're doing bhakti of Shri Krishna, everybody else is happy already. Kaun ungli uthayega Shri Krishna ke bhakt ke samne? No one can do anything to Shri Krishna's devotee. They're all his employees. See what happened to Indra? When he objected, Shri Krishna humbled him and Indra came with his crown, placed it at Shri Krishna's feet and apologized and surrendered to him. So this is an important part of devotion, understanding that you don't have to supplement it with anything. Bhakti is not dependent on anything. That doesn't mean you think like, okay, I'm doing bhakti to Shri Krishna, so I don't need proper food anymore for my body. I don't need proper exercise. I'm doing bhakti. It doesn't mean that. You have to take proper care of your body, do exercise, whatever form of exercise works for you. Eat healthy vegetarian food. Get proper sleep. You have to support your spiritual progress by taking care of your physical body. But you don't have to supplement your spiritual practice of bhakti with anything. It's not forbidden. No one's going to come and fine you for doing that. It's just that it's unnecessary. That's the point that's being made. That the highest form of bhakti is practiced without any kind of mixture with anything else. You don't, if someone says, well, I'm doing bhakti, but I also have this kundalini in the base of my spine. Don't I also have to activate that? I've heard that from so many people that, well, I'm doing devotion and that's fine. That's going to get me this, this, and this. But don't I also have to, you know, refine my chakras and activate this kundalini energy? No, it's a totally unrelated practice. And by the way, it happens automatically in a very subtle, organic way. Simply by doing bhakti, your whole energetic system gets refined. It doesn't mean that doing yoga doesn't provide some extra benefit, some very real benefit to you physically, and can also help you by calming your mind before practicing devotion. So it's not, there is a use of yoga, but one shouldn't have the feeling that bhakti is incomplete because I also need to do this thing and this thing. That's the main point I'm making. So we'll stop here for today, and tomorrow we'll continue with the discussion of bhakti and understand that bhakti should be free from all desires but one. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.